Now we're turning to Romans in chapter 13, again very practical an application of the doctrines that the apostle has espoused and written of throughout his epistle. Seems a rather strange place to get to, but this morning we talk about heaven's rule and civil government, its place in God's order, refers to tax evasion, very appropriate in our time and in our age, as you know, so much spoken of tax evasion, loopholes to paying taxes, and so on. Is God concerned with these civil issues? Maybe surprising in some ways, but actually taxes, it would seem from the passage we've read, are a divine ordinance and appointment. We grumble about paying our taxes. They tell us there are only two things certain in life, death and taxes. And that suggests perhaps it's something of man, something of man only. What has tax got to do and the payment of taxes with living for God in this world? Well, quite a lot, actually. It has an evangelistic import and application, indeed. It may surprise you. I don't think it would. But in Matthew chapter 17, and I just want to turn you there for a moment, the Lord spoke concerning taxes, and indeed, as you know, he paid his. He submitted himself to all civil authority and power. And he wasn't under a particularly beneficial and sympathetic government. These are occupying forces of the day. Did he encourage insurrection? No, he recognizes civil government. In fact, Paul tells us in this chapter in Romans, the powers that be are ordained of God. Legitimate powers that be. And there's a big debate, and we could look at what does legitimate mean? When after all, Rome was imperial Rome and ruled over nations like the Jews by military conquest. Yet Christ submits to them. And in Matthew chapter 17, you have that interesting little account where Peter is sent to go fishing. Verse 24. And when they were come to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter. Now there are various terms used in scripture for taxes. Tribute seems to be a tax that was levied by the Romans over the conquered nations and peoples. A tax they had set up. They had a separate tax for, if you like, civil government. This may have been to maintain their military. So it was a specific tax, a tribute. Now, there was also a temple tax. Of course, the Jews maintained taxes also. But when they came to Capernaum, they that received tribute money came to Peter and said, doth not your master pay tribute? He saith, yes. And when he was come into the house, Jesus prevented him, saying, "What thinkest thou, Simon? Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom?" The other term, or tribute. You know, we talk about VAT, we talk about income tax, we talk about various taxes, business taxes, so many taxes. Well, we weren't the first to have more than one kind of tax, and here are two specifically referred to. Of whom do the kings of the earth take custom or tribute? Of their own children or of strangers? Peter saith unto him, "Of strangers." Jesus saith unto him, "Then are the children free. Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them, go thou to the sea, and cast an hook, and take up the fish that first cometh up. And when thou hast opened his mouth, thou shalt find a piece of money. That take, and give unto them for me and thee." Now when asked, it's interesting, verse 25. When asked, "Does your master pay tribute?" Peter says, yes. This was not the first time he had paid the tribute tax. It was his custom. It was his manner. And notice he says, "Lest we offend them." There is an evangelistic import to living under civil authority and government and paying and contributing to the national income for the upkeep of government and power. They are ordained by God. They are to be a blessing to the people. You say, well, there aren't very many around the world. That's true. But we do not dismiss the order of God because there are bad examples of it. Are there bad policemen? No question. Would you like to live in a nation without policemen? I certainly wouldn't. There are bad doctors in the hospital? Maybe you got one. But I wouldn't like to live in a nation where there were no hospitals or no doctors to go to. Bad examples do not negate the reality and the responsibility that we are obliged to maintain and uphold. And taxes was one of them, as we'll see. But Romans begins with our responsibility to civil government. So if you're back in Romans chapter 13, and as you're turning there, did you notice why the convoluted manner of getting the tax money ever strike you? The Lord could have taken a coin out of the air. Why has he sent Peter to go with a fishing rod and go down to the river or the lake and fish and catch a fish and then take the money out of its mouth? What do you think that might be teaching us? I think he's saying there's got to be effort. You've got to work. You've got to do something and then contribute where and when it's possible. Here's the means. He didn't make it so simple for Peter and manufacture a coin and say, off you go. Go down to the river. Fish for a little while. How long? Catch the fish. We'll not make it too hard. It'll be the first fish you catch. And that'll have a gold coin in his mouth. You go and pay the taxes. He had to work. He had to do a little bit of labor to get it. So here, underscored, even is the work ethic, how we go about our contributions and so on. Thankfully, if you're in the happy place, if it's happy of retirement and you don't have to work anymore, thank the Lord for wonderful provision. That's the beauty, or one of them, of the nations in which or this nation in which we live. So all sorts of spin-offs from this, but essentially the principle I want to just put before you, that the Bible puts before us, civil government and its upkeep is ordained of God. It's not simply an institution of men. This is God's order. And it's a wonderful blessing to the world. Indeed, government or authority in all kinds of areas of life and in all aspects of life. We have civil government, we have military, we have domestic authority and government. You that are parents have invested in you this wonderful privilege but great responsibility. You have a certain authority given to you. The institution is divine ordinance and a divine institution. Civil governments equally so. You have authorities and governmental control and responsibility institutionally. You have it in the home domestically, parents, guardians. You have it in the workplace, professionally, and so forth. And you have a right wherever you are, and indeed a responsibility, to be exercising your authority in a way that is pleasing to God, and you're going to be accountable for it, and so am I. So at the outset, let's underscore this. When we're speaking of government and authority here, it's across the whole spectrum, wherever God has given authority to be exercised. For example, parents, remember, and this world we live in has, it would seem, oh, to a great degree forgotten this, every parent is a governor. Every parent has invested in them and given to them a measure of control and authority that they must exercise aright. They will be accountable to God. Can you consider and think? Those that are begetting their children, those that have their fun, their one-night stands, and the children that are produced from such things, without a thought for that child, their own offspring. Some don't even know, perhaps, that they have offspring. Can you imagine on the day of judgment, when they are called to give an account, whosoever, and of course here it's speaking specifically of resisting the civil government and authority, but in verse 2 Paul says, whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. Those that negate their responsibility, though also of that same authority, are answerable to God. We're going to see this passage shows us very clearly where the governments of the world are negating responsibility, neglecting their responsibility, will be culpable or will be blameworthy before God. Those in authority that have reached the upper echelons of rule and government will be judged by God for how they have governed the nations. This doesn't rate much, doesn't feature on the radar of people's thinking. Government, civil government, that's all about man and man's institutions and so on. What's that got to do with the day of judgment? Well, everything. Accountability. Responsibilities and privileges have to be accounted for before God. So let's look at the early verses first of all. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. This goes for every power. The godless, the atheistic, you mean the communist? Yes. Every power, says Paul, there is no power whatsoever except it is ordained by God. They'll be held accountable for how they govern, but they are appointed by God himself, perhaps judgmentally. We are told, what we deserve. At times, mercifully, not always. But that's just the mercy of God. But then he uses corrupt powers, doesn't he? How many have fled to Christ under a corrupt authority and government? How many have been deprived of so much who may not have had a thought for God, but so sorely persecuted and oppressed that they heard the gospel of salvation. They heard of the rule of the King of Kings. They were drawn to Christ. How God works, you see, all things together for good, for his own glory, for his own purposes in saving multitudes. Yes, all powers are ordained of God. There is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. So have we the right to rebel? Has anybody the right to rebel? Is there such a thing as a just rebellion against a corrupt power? Well, I'll leave you with the question and just move on quickly. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. They that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. So where there is a settled government, a settled authority, we are not to rebel against that. Not violently. Not with arms. We can challenge, we can speak. No question about that. But we mustn't resist. Indeed, we could bring judgment to ourselves. Now it has to be said, what Paul's speaking of here generally is a fairly, if not placid or sympathetic government, at least in measure, one that's ruling and has an order and an ordered society. Where that is, be thankful for it. Do not resist. Do not rebel. Do not take up arms against them. Submit to their rule, with the exception where you're commanded to do that which is contradictory to God's word. Then you can stand firm. Then you can reject. Then you can object to it. But you may have to take the consequences. Notice verse 3. Proper government, civil government, are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. What is civil government meant to be about? Well, encouraging that which is good, rewarding that which is good, suppressing that which is evil. Now here is point one. Here's where the many governments in the world, including our own, I would suggest, are falling short of God's ordinance and God's order. They are not a terror to evil anymore. You see, with the removal of capital punishment for capital offences, they have ceased to be a terror to evil. What Paul is recognizing and acknowledging here, if not indeed instructing indirectly, is that a government ought to be, in some ways, something that inspires fear. Not cringing, cowering fear. Not a Stalinist-like despot, as we see in parts of the world. But a government that has such authority within it, it has the authority and power to use the sword to indeed execute those. And of course, that's the extreme end of governmental control and order. But Paul says, look, rulers are not, they are not meant to be a terror. The word could be translated fear. It's the phobos, phobia word. Rulers are not a terror to good works. They should be encouraging their citizens to good things, wholesome things, mutually beneficial things. Legislate for such things. Whatever legislation God's given us, great freedom and flexibility. And this is different in different parts of the world. And from time to time you'll hear, oh, don't you know in Canada they do such a thing. In South Africa they do it this way. And we say, that sounds good. Why don't we do that? So there's a great flexibility within how you might go about this. But look, what every government is meant to have is that it's meant to have and hold that fear, a measure of fear that if I step out of line, if I commit the most hideous offences, then the government, civil authority, the legislature of that land will come down upon me. And that's right, for it's a measure of control. It's God's method of control. And we are to accept that order. Christians yield. Christians submit. Christians support. Christians uphold these things. They may be against us naturally. We're not saying we approve everything that our government does. In fact, we as Christians have serious problems with our own government now in so many ways and in so many things. But primarily, its government, civil government, is ordained by God. The powers that be are ordained by God. Wilt thou then, verse 3, not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. Does that always happen? Well, no way. Is it happening today? No, because it would seem in many things what is evil is being called good, and good is being called evil. But primarily, principally, where we uphold the law, obey the law won't touch you. It won't oppress you. It won't just simply pick on you. If that happens, it's a bad policeman or a bad legislator or whatever. No, this is God's order. Look, verse 4. Those in civil government are the ministers of God to thee for good. It's a fallen world. It's a corrupt world. Where there is any measure of stability, that's a blessing of God, even if it's an occupying force that's brought that. We thank God for we don't see rampant anarchy, at least in our country, because that's the alternative to civil government and civil rule. Would you like to be where there is no rule? Where there is no authority? Where everyone does as he wants? That's anarchy. This is God's order. Look, for he is the minister of God, a revenger, verse 4, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Government, ministers, those in authority will be judged by God, are accountable to God. This is what they're meant to do. Even if they've now abrogated responsibility, neglected their duty in this regard, they must give an account to God. But again, I come back to it. What about yours in whatever sphere of authority and rule you have, or even influence, primarily as parents? Have we lived? Have we exercised godly control? Have we been the role model we ought to be? Well, I'm sure we've all failed. None of us are perfect in those things. But are we striving to be? Lord, what's your order? What must I do? What should I be doing? Have I neglected my responsibility? Have I let the world bring my children up? Do I counter the things they're now hearing in school or college? Do I instruct them in the things of God? Do I tell them they must first and foremost acknowledge the authority of God himself? How twisted our world has become. As you know, in so many ways and in so many places, there are parameters of rule, and they must be worked within. But so many are usurping authority. So in one sense, they neglect it. They don't bear the sword anymore. They're not that symbol of fear that they ought to be, nor do they strike fear into the criminals in society. For they have decided what is best. They know better than God. And corporal punishment is out. Capital punishment is out. The world knows best. We will control criminality. And what have we got? They're neglecting their duty. There is no fear within the criminal fraternity, if I call them that. But look, on the other hand, whilst they're doing that on one hand, on the other, what else do they do? They're usurping. They're taking government and control and authority where they have no right to do so. And what I mean by that is, they are now saying what children should be taught in the colleges and the schools. They will instruct. They will command. They will order what teachers teach. In the sphere of morality, sexuality, and so on. Who gave them the authority to do that? No one. Now we are giving to doctors an authority whereby they can issue abortifacients, the morning after pills, not just without the consent of a parent who's ultimately responsible for the moral upbringing of their children, not just that they don't demand consent or seek consent from a parent, they now can issue these and prescribe them without the knowledge of the parent. Who gave them the right to do that? You see, they've usurped authority. This isn't their right, but they are answerable to God. Now look, verse 5, but we must be subject to the civil authorities, to the powers that be. We can speak out, we can object, we can desist on certain issues. Take the consequences. We do not lead rebellion. We do not take up arms. No, even this government is ordained of God, as we've read. Verse 5, wherefore ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake. What does Paul mean? He means there are two motives to submitting to civil government. The first one is from wrath, the fear of punishment. Again, there should be that fear in all of us that if we stepped out of line, if we killed someone, our life would be taken too. We've removed that. Corporal punishment, even a step down, has been removed also. We're now forbidding parents to do such a thing. Corporal punishment is out altogether. But Paul is reasoning from what is in place, what ought to be in place. Ye must needs be subject, not only for wrath, fear them, fear what they can do, justly, legitimately, ordained and appointed by God. They carry and bear the sword. They're God's ministers, he says, in effect. So not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake, submit to the powers that be. Meaning, have a conscience towards God. Your conscience should trouble you. If you were one considering or joining a band that was to have or encourage a coup, a military coup, that's not part of the Christian life at all. No, for conscience sake, submit. Live under God. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. And remember, look, just across to chapter 12, verse 19. What you can't do as an individual is commanded a civil government to do. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. It's not your place. Anarchy results if everybody takes revenge on another. If it's not ordered, if it's not civil government that has the courtroom, that passes the sentence, if there's no order, you've got anarchy. You can't do this as an individual. But then he's commanding in chapter 13 the civil government to do. They are to avenge. They are to take up the case of the wronged individual and punish. So look, verse 6, for this cause then, and this is where it stretches out into even our taxes, we are to uphold and support by contributing financially to civil government. For this cause, pay ye tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Oh, unknowing ministers, not voluntarily, no doubt, but whether they know it or not, they are part of God's order, God's ordinance and ordaining and decreeing for order in societies of the world. They are there by God's placement. So Christians, here is our responsibility. Pay your taxes then, says Paul. mightn't it be a big issue here? You've grown up in a fairly free world, so have I. We're not under an oppressive government or regime. We're not under occupying forces. This is radical back then. This places him against the zealots of his day, of those that were plotting insurrection, of those that were the terrorists of their time. Let's get rid of the Romans. Let's get our independence back. Let's get our nation back. Paul saying, pay taxes. Support the power that be. It's ordained of God. How can you do that, Paul? You're a traitor. You're a coward. No, he's a man of faith. What helps you survive in many of the injustices in the world, and I just close with this, and spread it out like this. How does a Christian live where there is great injustice? Under governments that are promoting some hideous and perverse things. Don't you feel like saying, if I could stop it, I wouldn't give you a penny? You don't deserve a penny. But why must we do it? Well, there are a number of reasons. But remember, you're a beneficiary in this country at least. And all nations have their own systems. And no doubt beneficial in great measure to their people. Because God has so ordered it that we are not anarchic. Our world is not total anarchy. God forbid any of us are alive if it ever does become like that. I don't want to be here. But we're beneficiaries of so many other things through civil government. This is the mercy of God, not men. You pay your taxes, you have an NHS system. You have a national health. Sure, it's weak. Sure, it fails some people. Sure, it lets some down. Multitudes, millions benefit. I hope you're grateful. I hope you can see that. You have a education system here, the envy of the world. Your children, and they can go to a school, books supplied, regular class. Power doesn't shut off halfway through. That's an exception, or something's happened. Somebody snipped a cable somewhere. They can sit in relative comfort, summer and winter. Things supplied for them. Helps given. All sorts of assistance given in times of need. Thank God for it. Thank the Lord for it. Recognize His order. Oh, our world, when they are called to account, are going to stand before God in things they don't even think about at the moment. Not even on the radar. Everything just taken for granted. And it's often the case, isn't it? Invariably the case. The more we're given, the more that's freely available, the more for granted we take it all. There are people in parts of the world that would envy this, that would be so grateful to have a fraction of what we've got. Here we take it. Here we give no thanks to God for any order. But we are accountable. The governments of the world are accountable. Individuals are accountable. Let's seek to be good Christians good citizens that don't deny God's order, that show the faith element in our life. For where there is injustice, faith operates and says, Lord, I leave that with you. I speak out when I can. I am to stand up against injustice. I can speak out against it. If I cannot change the government, and even here you're given some opportunity, at least by a vote, to do that. Others don't have that opportunity either. But look, whatever it is, we say, Lord, how do we please you? How do we live for you? How do we show Christ is alive? How do we show there's a God in heaven? Will we do it in the life that we live? We accept some of these things because we know vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. That's right down to the individual aspect, isn't it? Somebody treats you like nothing, totally unjustly, unfairly. You can say, Lord, you deal with it. You deal with them. It's not my place. I feel like going in there and sorting it out. But Lord, you're sovereign. The government doesn't deal with it. You have it recorded. You will deal with it. We have a faith element, you see. And we mustn't deny that. We demonstrate that. It may make us seem to the world and even to some other Christians, you're weak, you're feeble, you're cowards, you wouldn't lift a finger. Do you know the greatest strength of all is manifest when you're on the receiving end unjustly? And doesn't Peter argue this in his own epistle? He tells even some of the downtrodden wives, take this unjustly. Say nothing. Let your life speak. That's hard to do. Don't revile those that revile you. He's the perfect example. When reviled, he reviled not again. He didn't revile. No, he committed it all to the Father. Justice, perfect justice is coming. But this is our role here on earth. So, for this cause, go on paying those old taxes. These people are God's ministers attending continually upon this very thing. Thank you, Lord, for order, such as it is in our nation and in the world still. Take the opportunities to evangelize, that people come into a right relationship with the supreme power and supreme authority.